Welcome to Robbinsdale Revisited. Today I'm here with Pete Ritchie, president of the Robbinsdale Historical Society. You know, most of the suburbs in Minneapolis are named after the landscape. We have a Richfield, a Golden Valley, an Eden Prairie. But Robbinsdale is a little bit different. It's not named after the landscape, but after a person, Andrew B. Robbins. He was a Civil War veteran, an entrepreneur, a state senator, and had a wonderful family that moved to what is now Robbinsdale. Today, Pete is going to tell us a little bit more about Robbinsdale's founding family.
I get a call from this woman, and she says, you know, we're remodeling this old house up in Anoka. And we found that the owner was a man named Daniel Robbins, and that he had a little mill. And we understand that he's related to the Robbins family that founded Robbinsdale. And turned out, yeah, his father's house is still standing in Anoka. At the Robbinsdale Historical Society, we have a wonderful collection of letters that Andrew B. Robbins wrote. Many of them are correspondence back to his mother and father in Anoka that he was writing during the Civil War. After he enlisted, he was sent to Fort Ripley, and he was among the Ho-Chunk Ojibwe or Chippewa that were there. His job was to sort of, you know, they were supposed to keep them apart from what was going to happen in the Dakota War, because there were some Ho-Chunk and Ojibwe that wanted to redress old grievances, is the way that it was put. And he was stationed there for a while, and it was kind of uneventful. And then he was sent off to the Civil War. And at some point, we could go through the battles that he fought there. But after the war was over, he came to St. Anthony, before it was part of Minneapolis. And that's where he met his wife, Adelaide, who was T.B. Walker's sister. You know, by all accounts, they had a whirlwind courtship, and he got involved in various business ventures. And eventually, they went to Willmar, and he was president of the bank there and was interested in the railroads, was elected to the state legislature. When he gets to Robbinsdale, and he's bought these 90 acres, and he's trying to pick out the place where he wants to build a house. And he ends up over on the southwest side of Twin Lake, and he builds this fantasy of turrets and dormers and porches and breezeways and places where a carriage could come through. And he lays out the lands. He has a long, long driveway, and he plants trees on either side of it. He plants orchards and apple trees. And Adelaide was also a heck of a gardener. But by that time, they've already got at least three or four daughters, and they eventually have five daughters. The house is completed by 1890, and it's 16 rooms, lots of stained glass, polished woodwork, fireplaces. There's a grand piano. The library's filled with hundreds of books. You got five fireplaces to keep out the winter cold. There was indoor plumbing, and so the place was really just the envy of the neighbors. There were some nice houses out here at that time, but there was nothing like the Robbins Mansion. You know, he loved trees. He'd been influenced by a guy named Richard Shute, and this man in 1858 purchased 2,000 trees, and he planted them all over St. Anthony, which of course later became Minneapolis. So if you're over there by River Place, I wonder if any of those trees could be still there. The people of Robbinsdale at first were kind of delighted that this guy was coming to town and putting all this work into the place. And the Robbins had a gardener, and he drove a team of horses, and he'd pull a wagon with water, and he'd water the young trees. And the house and the land became known as the Orchards, and it was kind of a horticultural showplace. Mrs. Robbins was an expert with flowers, and I've been told that she knew the Latin names for all the things she was planting, and they had a little greenhouse, and there was lots of exotic plants. And you had an artesian well that sort of ran constantly through a little pasture, and it ended up with a little pond in front of the Robbins Mansion. And when you see pictures of this, there's some cobbled together stones, and you'll see the little fountain, and it looks a lot like the stones that are over at Grazier Park. The first time I saw that picture, it was in Helen Blodgett's book, and I'd been over to Grazier Park, and a lot of it didn't look like it does now. A lot of it was covered with dirt, and some of these stones were still sticking out. And I thought for sure this must be the ruins of the Robbins Mansion, that this was on this side of the highway. It was actually, you know, not that far away, but had nothing to do with that. And it's always, you know, we've always wondered if somehow that little fountain didn't inspire the water feature that was at Grazier Park. That's a bit of a stretch. The Robins' daughters were all well-educated, and they ended up going to the University of Minnesota. I think they all, except maybe one, graduated. We're just going to talk a little bit about them. The ones that really got my attention are Adelaide Robins, and that was, she was born in 1881, so a few years before, and she was went to the University of Minnesota, was accomplished musician. She was also the first one to get married, and she married a guy named Ralph Perkins Gillette. And so the society pages at the time, you know, talked about the bridal shower at the Gillette home in Minnetonka. So it made a big splash, and she married well. Gillette was the owner of the Minneapolis Steel and Machinery Company. And Adelaide lived for a long time. She died in 1965. They had one child, although we just can't find that much about him. He was a Louis Gillette. And another Gillette shows up often in Robbinsdale history, and we've never been able to figure out if that one's related. But all of the Robins girls seem to have write poetry. And I'll just read a quick one that is from Adelaide Gillette, although we could read poetry from all of the Robins girls, and we'll talk about Amy in a minute. But the little poem that she wrote, she published two small books of poetry. One was called Interval, and the other one was called Afterglow. And you can still find them on Amazon. You can find them on Google Books. And but I'll read this one. It says, "When the sunset brings the afterglow, bright little windows, row on row, all seem to burn with inward light, then pitilessly falls the night." And they all kind of rhyme like that. Amy Robins was always the Robins' daughter that caught my attention the most. The earliest things I've read about her is she would show up with her violin at Christmas gatherings in town. And she would, she played and she wrote, and she ended up at the University of Minnesota too. And not only did she graduate, she got a master's degree in architecture. She ended up marrying a man who was a bit of an alcoholic and kind of just took advantage of her a little bit. Her father built her a beautiful house that was near Crystal Lake, and the family that bought it after them left us a nice history of that house, pretty close to where Robin's Landing is now, probably closer to where the funeral home is next door. In her house also, she liked to call the orchards, which can get confusing when you're trying to finish which house is which. Amy Robins really kind of put herself on the map when she decided that, you know, this relationship wasn't working with her husband, and World War I was breaking out, and she wanted to do something for her country. She was inspired by her mother's, who was a nurse in the Civil War, and her father's Civil War service. She enlisted. The first thing she did was teach soldiers telegraphy at Fort Snelling. And then she went and joined the Women's Naval Service and Training School and worked in the radio department there. And then she went to France and accepted a job as a canteen worker. She was, you know, a little older in her early 40s. That was just the sort of canteen worker they wanted, somebody who seemed like they were a little bit motherly. After a while, though, she wanted to take on more, so she volunteered with the Red Cross and served right on the front lines, you know, worked in ambulances, and unfortunately, it just became too much for her, and she had to get out of the battle zone and had a nervous breakdown, but ended up working in the south of France, teaching soldiers how to identify aircraft. After the war, she came back here, and she wrote a book called Echoes of France, and it was pictures and poems about her experience. And it's, of course, dedicated to her parents and their Civil War service. It's really quite beautiful, and it got a lot of attention. And it's also something that you can find on Google Books, and you can find it on Amazon. It's not cheap, but it's a beautiful book to own, and it's beautifully illustrated. But that all led her to getting involved in politics, getting involved with the BFW, and she was the first female vice commander of the BFW, raised a little bit of a stir there. And then she started, she was a fan of Wilson, and she was very interested in the founding of the League of Nations and worked on some of the legal documents that helped create that organization. But of course, we didn't join it. So it didn't amount to that much. Then she got involved with her other sister, Edith, was the executor or executrix of her father's estate. Andrew B. Robbins died in 1910. But while Amy was away, Edith started running the real estate business. When Amy came back, they opened up a little tea house that was just north of 42nd and West Broadway and on the west side of the road. They also made the real estate office there. And since Amy Robbins had a little background in architecture and design, she was known as Amy Robbins Ware. She divorced her husband but kept the last name. They built at least 10 houses as you go north on the west side of West Broadway there. You can still see them. And, you know, they're representative of the time, some bungalows, some four square, but they all have Amy Robbins' touch. The tea house stood until the 1970s when it was torn down for the funeral home that's there now. They did serve tea there. They rented it out for various functions. We have pictures of the, you know, all the firemen sitting there having a meal. It had great big stone fireplaces, and we know that Amy and Edith went to the quarry and picked out the stones for a wall that went around the little building and the big stone fireplaces. We know that Edith Robbins was still using the building in the 1940s before she died, although at that time there wasn't a business being run out of it. And I've always thought it was funny that Robbinsdale, which in the early days was really known for its saloons, we took advantage of the fact that Minneapolis was closing their bars down on Sunday, and then people could come here and drink. That in the midst of all that, the Robbins sisters decided to open a tea house. They were also known as teetotalers. So Amy Robbins' book is beautiful, and she also had a lot to do with starting the Robbinsdale Library. She was one of the founding members. So in 1907, as their meeting notes open, they're all in Amy's hand. And she had a lot with, she went around and asked all the locals for money to build the building that we're sitting in now and to build the first building that was there before that. So let's talk a little bit more about the Robbins daughters. The other one that really features large in Robbinsdale history is Edith. I've always loved the description of, you know, here's this house, there's five daughters, and Andrew B. Robbins is described as the most patient man on earth because, you know, he was a man of action and wanted to get things done. He was always ready to race out the door. His daughters were not always ready. His wife and daughters were not always ready to just get going and get out the door. So, you know, we're going to turn that clock back to about 1907. Remember, Andrew B. Robbins dies in 1910. So there's quite a few Robbins weddings that year. Edith was also married that year. So Edith Austin Robbins was married in October 1907 to Thomas Lester Daniel. So Edith often, they all seem to keep that Robbins name, but she's often referred to as Edith Robbins Daniel. And so she's 36 years old when she gets married. She was born in 1871. And was definitely older than any of her sisters when they were married. But she lived a long life, and she stayed in Robbinsdale the whole time. Amy stayed in Robbinsdale too, but Edith was here until she passed away toward the end of World War II. So after she graduates from high school, and we know that she graduated from East High School, I don't know how she got all the way over there back and forth, but the streetcar system was amazing. When she's 18 years old, after she graduates, she gets to go visit Europe, probably on T.B. Walker's dime. And she went to Rome. the steamer she was on collided with an iceberg in the middle of the ocean, but thankfully, not like the Titanic, they didn't sink. And she spent her college years at McAllister and Carleton College and earned a Bachelor's of Science degree from the University of Minnesota in 1894 and a Master of Arts degree 2 years later. She was a teacher. She taught in the Robbinsdale Grade School, which was called the Parker School. She taught in a high school and Central and East High Schools in Minneapolis. She taught Latin, mathematics, and English. She served on the Robbinsdale School Board for 25 years, and one of my favorite pictures is her hiding a time capsule in the wall of the first Robbinsdale High School. We actually have that time capsule here in the museum sitting up somewhere. It's a copper box. You can see her and the rest of the school board there. She was an accomplished pianist, and they all played music, it seemed like. She was a member of the tourist club, and her church was important to her. She went to the Robbinsdale Congregational Church, and she adopted a daughter, Helen Mary Daniel. It's not exactly clear when her husband and her got divorced. When her father died, Edith and her sister, as we mentioned, opened up the Highway Tea House in Robbinsdale, and there they started their real estate and insurance and money lending business through the Robbinsdale Insurance and Loan Agency that was located at 4223 Crystal Lake Avenue. They also handled the financial affairs of the Andrew B. Robbins estate. So I think what best describes Edith's trials and tribulations maybe in running her father's business and opening the tea house and doing a real estate and loan business and Amy trying to help her out. Amy decided to, I think, really capsulize that in a what she calls a weekly bulletin. And she spells weekly, W-E-A-K-L-Y, bulletin, issued every once in a while. This one is issued January 9th, 1919. Will you not accept advertisements of patent medicines or Wilson's face? I don't know what Wilson's face is, but there were a variety of people selling patent medicines in Robbinsdale, and we have some of their advertising and some of their little bottles of snake oil right here in the museum. So this one begins, weekly bulletin issued every once in a while, January 9th, 1919. We do not accept advertisements of patent medicines or Wilson's face. Wave of crime in Robbinsdale. Charles A. Garner, our genial mail clerk, has been sentenced to serve 2 years in the federal prison at Leavenworth for robbing the U.S. mails. W.A. Farr, our friendly and respected bank cashier, has been sentenced to serve 2 to 30 years in Stillwater. He entered a plea of guilty for making false entries in the books. He is greatly missed from our midst, but not as greatly as the large amounts of cash that many of our citizens are missing. Our well-known hardware merchant, George S. Nash, has turned over his stock to be sold to satisfy his creditors. He probably carried the largest overdraft in many years at the Robbinsdale Bank that has never been able to support a man of his size. It is also reported that the Kirkwood Auto Company has been forced to pay the sum of $1,000 every week to apply to their indebtedness to the wreck of the Robbinsdale Bank. The Kirkwood Company borrowed $39,000 from the bank, which had a capital of $10,000. The Roth Grocery Store also borrowed far beyond their depth and are liable to be drowned in the crash. All this goes to show that women should not be allowed to transact business. $35,000 worth of Liberty bonds are missing from the archives of the great banking institution. We do not stoop to village gossip, as do some of our contemporaries. Multi-millionaire Thomas B. Walker visits our village. It is officially reported that T.B. Walker, known to many of the villagers as Uncle T.B., visited his sister, Ms. A.B. Robbins, this week. It is said that it gives a great deal to his sister, a great deal of advice, and quite a few jugs that have been canned out of his art gallery. Ms. Robbins returned to Minneapolis with him to spend the weekend at his palatial home on Groveland Terrace. We understand she ate 2 turkeys before she returned. Whole family most cruelly inoculated. Ms. Robbins and her daughter and granddaughter and Ms. Charles Glass were inoculated against the influenza. The deed was done by Dr. C. M. Olson, an accomplice of Dr. F. S. Rhoda. They are still recovering at their home. Heavy silver-mounted handbag seen hanging from the wrist of Edith Robbins Daniel, who is reported to be deeply in debt. We have learned that it is a gift from Mrs. Charles S. Pillsbury. Dr. Rhoda and Mrs. Rhoda returned from their large New York hotel. Mrs. F. C. Rhoda went to New York to bring back her husband, who was returning from France. She secured him as he left the boat, and after serving a short term at one of the largest and most expensive New York hotels, she brought him home. They're at the Curtis Court until they start living someplace else. Helen Mary Robbins lost her first tooth. The beaming smile of our infant movie star is now marred by the loss of a first tooth. She is working overtime to build a new one. A full report of the health officer shows that the entire family are in perfect health. Ms. Robbins is younger than at last report. She has been twice arrested for speeding, but the last time, the mounted police could not catch her. Next bulletin, issued this time soon. Gossip must be in by 4 o'clock of each week. The bulletin and home and fireside of 1 year for 30 cents, if this coupon is set. Yeah, so we've spent a couple hours just kind of talking through the early days of Robbinsdale. We could spend a couple hours just talking about the Robbins family. We could spend a couple hours just talking about the Nassett family, the Shumways, the Parkers. We've got so much correspondence here at the museum. We have so many records and pictures and newspaper articles. And the story of Robbinsdale is just kind of right there. And you can reach out and listen to it and grab it and see it. It just changes your perspective as you drive down the street and you think, what used to be there? What used to be there? And sometimes it's still there. That barn from one of the early settlers is still back there, just off of West Broadway. Some of these old houses that were built by the Robbins family from his first subdivision that was platted here, Robbinsdale Park, they're still standing back here behind the Robbinsdale Historical Society. So next time you drive by, you'll know that was Robbins. And it was the building boom. They built 13 houses. Of course, then the stock market crashed in the 1890s and had a big depression. And he did get some other things built. But we know the city didn't fill it until much later.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
Bicycle into the city every Saturday to see our friends. Back home.